Hi, and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly Podcast. It's for the week of April 27th. Wow. No baseball yet. It's late on a Saturday night, and with me is Jim Allen. How you doing, bud?
I'm doing good. April 27th and no baseball. That's mean. I mean, that's like, you know, we're having a coronavirus, and John's like kicking baseball when it's down.
I'm not kicking baseball when it's down. I'm down.
Okay. And you're just kicking.
I'm down.
But still kicking.
I think a lot of people are ready to lash out and kick out and scrap, and I'm with them, but we just have to hang in there.
Where are you going to be in 6 months?
Right? We would really like to know the answer to that question. Indeed. So we can hit the fast forward. But yeah, again,
my wife and I are going through clothes this year and saying, you know, we might just need pajamas all year.
Nice to know that you do wear the pajamas.
Well, keep that in your mind when we're recording the
podcast. Okay. All right. Stop. Don't scare the children and don't scare any of the adults. All right. As we've been starting the show each week by saying thank you to the healthcare workers and to keep up the fight, and we appreciate you guys. The essential workers and all the people who are going to go back to trying to have some semblance of a life. So everybody just be careful and be safe.
Yes. We know people whose lives are affected by your choices. So
that's right.
Make good ones.
Yes, please. On behalf of your fellow man and woman. So on this week's show, we've got an interview with new Lotte Marines reliever Jay Jackson. And we're going to talk about other leagues in Asia starting up and the COVID-19 recovery guys. We've got some high heat and some notes, so let's start swinging. All right, so former Carp setup man, Brewers reliever, and now Lotte reliever Jay Jackson. I talked to him on Monday, and he came to Japan in 2016, like I said, with the Carp. He had 37, then 30, and then 25 holds with him, respectively, over 3 seasons. Then Hiroshima let him go. He joined the Brewers and was on that team that lost to the Washington Nationals in the one-game playoff last year, and now he's back in Japan. He's 32, and we're glad to have him back. And as you'll hear me say on the interview, I expected to really see him at the ballpark and catch up with him there, but of course we have the situation that we have right now with games in limbo, the season in limbo, and in jeopardy, if you ask me. But everybody's just, as I keep saying, charging on, moving ahead. And the one thing about Jay is, one interesting note about Jay is a quick auto brain search by me turned up one pitcher who has done this, and it was Brian Sikorsky, who he actually started in the States, his career. Then he came to Japan. Then he went back to the United States to play. Then he came back to Japan and played. And that's going to Jay has matched that. And also, I talked to Jim about it. I said, Jim, can you remember any guys who have done it? And Jim did some actual research. And who did you uncover? Do you remember?
Makes it sound like I they were buried in my backyard. I don't even have a backyard. Was the first one that came to mind was Orestes de Strade, who had played for the Cebu Lions here, and then he went back and played for the Miami Marlins and then returned to the when they were in the Florida Marlins, and then came back and returned to Cebu. And then
basically those three are the only ones we really know about, but there's probably some other guys.
I would think there are.
And we're not counting the guys who only played indie ball per se.
Like
Julio Franco.
Craig Brazel played indie ball 1 year. Franco. Oh, right. He was in
Korea. Yes, but I wasn't counting him. Yeah. But he played indie ball. Yeah. Right. Yeah. He played indie ball, but I'm not counting him. Okay. So Jay says he's working out at home. He's doing what all the other players have been telling us they've been doing while they're trying to stay in shape and try to maintain some semblance of being in shape. And Jay said he is cooking, he's studying Japanese, and he's helping fellow newcomer and bullpen buddy Frank Herman stay in shape. So let's take a listen to what Jay's got to say. All right, joining us by phone is Jay Jackson of the Lotte Marines, a new reliever for the Marines. How you doing, man?
Great. Feel great. Yeah. just stuck in the house right now like everybody else, you know, trying to stay safe and healthy.
How's the family?
Everybody's good. Family in South Carolina as well. My son's in Hiroshima right now. He's doing pretty well. He's getting big. So, you know, everybody's doing pretty well.
All right. So how are you spending most of your time during this soft lockdown, as we call it?
I'm trying to get out every now and then and go play catch with Frank Herman every now and then, just to keep my body in shape and stay active. And I've been doing a few home workouts and things of that nature, just trying to come up with creative ways to just stay ready for whenever this thing stops.
Are you wearing out your Netflix or Amazon Prime account there?
Yeah, I think I've watched everything I possibly could on Netflix just about. So I need new ideas, but you know, just doing, you know, doing home workouts, going out for a walk every now and then, and I've been doing a lot of cooking lately, so that's kind of kept me busy and kept my creative juices going.
All right, excellent. So describe what your career has been since you were with the Hiroshima Carp.
Since then, you know, we won the 3 championships with this, in the Central League, and then I didn't return back to the team, and, you know, that was really a tough situation, but, you know, life goes on, and that was actually the year that my son was being born, was in 2018, so it was even tougher, and, you know, I talked to a few teams in the States just trying to figure out what my options were going to be. And then I talked to the Brewers for a bit and talked to David Stearns, who's their GM, and he gave me a call, and I decided to sign there on a minor league deal. And I had an opportunity to go there and pitch in, you know, one of the best bullpens in Major League Baseball, you know, so that was a big challenge for me. That was one of the things I really wanted to do, was find a team that was going to be a challenge and not so much just like an easy way to make it to the big league. So, and, you know, got to be on another playoff team with the Brewers that year, and that was really exciting, and that was fantastic. And, you know, now I'm back over here with Chiba Lotte, and, you know, just happy to be back, glad to be back and see all the love and the fans that I have and had, and the support that they gave me over the years and still do. It's amazing to see.
Yeah. How did you end up landing in Chiba?
I talked to him for a little bit. I talked to him while I was with the Brewers. They were trying to get me over here in the middle of the year. The Brewers, I guess, thankfully, since, you know, I got to be up with the big league team, said no for a couple times. Mm-hmm. Then the off season started, and I was talking to them. I was talking to Lotte, I was talking to the Brewers, and I was talking to a few other teams that my agent was in contact with, just trying to see what my options were. And, you know, Lotte put a great offer out there, and I saw what they were doing with their team and trying to go for the Pacific League Championship and a Japan Series Championship. And, you know, they expressed that I would be a vital part to the team. And I saw the signings they were making, and I wanted to be a part of that. I wanted to come over here and have a chance to win another championship. So they made it real appealing for me to come, and I said yes. And I'm glad I did. I love the team. I love the atmosphere. I love the staff they have here. And it's been amazing so far.
Yeah, I mean, how much consideration did you actually give to the notion that the Pacific League is the stronger of the two leagues in MPB?
That doesn't bother me at all. You know, for me, baseball is baseball. You know, I mean, I played in Major League Baseball. I mean, I played in MLB last year, so I can't really be like, oh, the Pacific League's stronger, I'm going to be less effective there. I went to, you know, played in Major League Baseball in one of the toughest divisions there in the NL Central, where it was a dog fight every game over there with the Cubs, the Brewers, the Reds, you know, the Cardinals. You have all those great teams. So it didn't bother me playing in the Central League or the Pacific League. It's just, you know, the chance to be on a team to go for a championship and have an opportunity to go to the playoffs again. is all I cared about, and trying to help a team win a championship regardless of what league it's in.
Well, you say that, but I mean, look at what SoftBank is doing. I mean, killing people, and you have to play them 20 plus times if you count in the playoffs. I mean, how much did you think about that?
Again, it's just one of those things. SoftBank's a team like everybody else. I mean, yeah, they put a lot of great players together.
No, they're not. They dominate the world. Yeah, I know what you're saying. I know what you're saying.
But, you know, for me, yeah, I was in the major leagues last year. You know, I got to face the Washington Nationals, who were the eventual World Series champions. I got to face, you know, the Chicago Cubs in big situations. I got to face the St. Louis Cardinals. I can't just be like, you know, SoftBank scares me, or SoftBank does a lot of great things. But to me, they're like any other team that I go up against. You know, you go up in there and you have confidence and you just try to do your job. You're going to win some, you're going to lose some. SoftBank has the ability and all the resources to go out and get all these great players every year. And that's, I mean, they have dominated the league for a long time. But for me, that playing SoftBank that many times in a year is just a challenge for me. It doesn't affect me wanting to not go there just so I don't have to face SoftBank. I'd rather face SoftBank 20, 30 times a year, honestly.
Good. Yeah, I'd like to see SoftBank in the NL Central. That'd be cool. get them out of Japan. Make it more interesting. Now, you're one of the few guys who has pitched stateside, come to Japan, gone back stateside, and then come back to Japan. So what's this transition period like for you? First of all, coming back to Japan, what's the transition like?
For me, coming back, it was just, you know, just, you got to readjust to the balls. You got to readjust to, you know, the game a little bit, you know, because, you know, they're going to do things a little bit differently here than they do in the States. But the transition's just, you know, you go out and play baseball. A lot of people like to put too much stress on certain things like that and get nervous, and they start getting worried about things of that nature. Like, how am I going to do in this situation? And I tell people, I've played in almost every league there is in the world. Like, and baseball to me is just baseball. You know, you got to go out there as a pitcher, you got to get 3 outs an inning. You know, you got to get 27 outs, and, you know, you just got to do your job. You got to hit, pitch, and field. And that's for me. So that's the way I look at it. Wherever I go, it's just, I'm playing baseball, and I'm playing the game I love to play, and I just go out there and give it my all. And you play so many games that, you know, you win some, you lose some. There's going to be ups and downs, and you just can't take them. You can't take the highs as high as they are, and you can't take the lows as low as they are, and just got to keep pushing, you know, and grinding your way out.
Which is what we're trying to do through this coronavirus situation. All right, yeah, I know. Now, how much did you, I mean, you talked about the fact that Lotte was signing certain players, but how much did you know about this team before you actually joined?
Like I said, I talked to Lotte a little bit while I was with the Brewers, so I started following them a little bit more last year, just when they said they're interested. And even before then, you know, we played them a couple times, and I liked the area of Lotte, and so... and I've had friends that played on Lotte before too. So I would just, you know, I check in on all the teams over here for a little bit, but, I saw, you know, just how scrappy they were. Even when we played them when I was with the Carp, you know, you just see how scrappy these dudes are. You know, they don't have a lot of big power threats, when we played them, but, you know, they were really scrappy. They took 2 out of 3 from us in 2018. Like, they're just a scrappy team, and they play well. You know, they do a lot of small things well, and they battle. And that's one thing that I've always noticed about them, is they battle, they grind, and that's a good thing. But for me, it's, you know, you look at the stats from last year and you see how close they were to making the playoffs and making the Climax Series. And then the signings they had was, for me, they were a huge team. And once I saw that, and I saw the effort that they were putting into putting the team together to try to win this thing, I was more excited to come.
Yeah, and these fans, the jumping fans, I mean, I've always been impressed. I don't remember what year it was that they started that, but I've always called this fan base really, really passionate, maybe one of the most passionate in terms of in-game cheering in Japan. But I'm contractually obligated to ask you about the rookie Sasaki. Now, have you seen him? And instead of, you know, heaping praise on him like I'm sure you would, what have you seen, if you've seen him, that has impressed you?
He's a great kid. I talked to him when I was there, and he was up with the team during spring training, and even when we were having workouts here in spring games and stuff, and he was there. You know, he would talk to me. He would come talk to me, and, you know, I want to help him. You know, I want to make sure he's going to be the best he can be, and I know he's anxious to be the best he can be. But from what I've seen so far is he's tall and lanky, and the ball just comes out of his hand really smooth. It comes out of his hand really easy. And, like, the amount of effort that he puts into pitches, and he's still just easily throwing 155 to 158. It's crazy and unbelievable. And I think he's gonna be really special if he can just stay on that path.
Yeah.
And just keep working. That's all I tell him. That's all I tell him every time I talk to him. I'm like, just enjoy the work that you're putting in and enjoy being out here. I was like, everything else, like, it'll come to you when it needs to, but the way that his body's built and the things that he's doing, like, he's doing things the right way, and he's really gifted.
Yeah, I've conveyed to our listeners from the news reports and the people who have caught him and the pitching coaches who have talked about him and other players, and everyone's so impressed with him. And I've never seen anything like it. And I haven't even seen him pitch live yet, but everybody seems to have an opinion about how to bring him along, you know, and how to bring along young pitchers. So what's the important thing when you're talking about developing a guy who could be a phenom? What do you, as a professional pitcher, think and look at when you watch a guy coming up like this?
For me, I just, you know, he needs reps. You know, he needs to build his confidence up, but you don't want to overextend him. You know, you want to make sure you give him the proper amount of rest and things of that nature. But for me, bringing up a young guy like that, he needs to pitch, and he needs to see hitters, and he needs to see how his stuff's working, what he needs to work on to develop into the pitcher that he needs to be. And I think that they're doing a good job of how they're bringing him along. They're making sure they're bringing him along slow so he doesn't get injured. I mean, he's still 18 years old.
Still a baby.
Like, he's still, like, really young. Like, he's wet behind the ears, pretty much, you know? So he's got the tools. And I think with the pitching coach that we have, Yoshi, he's going to do the right thing, because Yoshi had Ohtani, too. So I think he's got a good handle on how to bring the guys along. And like I said, for me, it's just going out there and getting work in and seeing how things are moving this way and that way. And once the thing starts up, getting in games, seeing hitters and seeing how hitters react to your stuff. And, you know, and then when it's time for him to be on the first team or even in the Nigoom, just you want to get out there and get reps so you can have that confidence. That's going to be a big thing, is building the confidence up to be on the first team. It's a little different, but once you have that confidence that you know you can get anybody out, then things get a lot easier.
Yeah, I was. We had a big special this year for the Pacific League with the intention or with the idea that the season might start on time, and we talked about the fact that Sasaki probably won't pitch a lot, but I thought for sure that, you know, with all the fanfare he has come into the league with, that he would pitch on the first team this year, but that, you know, with Yoshi, that they would bring him along fairly slowly. So that's good to hear that they are protecting him. He is young, so he does need to at least learn about professional baseball still. Now, do you have a sense of irony having come all this way to play back in Japan and then to have this coronavirus thing strike and halt everything?
I mean, you look at it as it's crazy to think of, you know, just the virus in general and the way it just not only Japan and sports has stopped, but the world's kind of just stopped. So you take it with a grain of salt almost. You are just thankful that, you know, you have somewhere safe to be and, you know, you have that. Thankfully right now that all my family's safe and sound and healthy. And it's, you just think it's crazy. I can't really put emphasis on it. And you think you're thankful for the healthcare workers and the people that are trying to fight this thing and Definitely. Get us all better. But, you know, being in Japan's a little tough because I'm not with my family, but yeah. I'm thankful that I have a place to stay. I have food and I have a way to, you know, stay healthy. And I have people looking after me that, you know, I have a team that they're trainers and doctors are making sure that everything's okay all the time. And that's all you can do at this point. You know, it's just one of those things that happen because you look at guys that went over from Japan to America this year. They're going through the same thing where, you know, first year over there or South Korea, first year over there. And then this happens and then you're like, oh God, like you're stuck. It's one of those things that happens. You can't do anything about it.
True that. True that. All right. Lastly, what if there's no season? Have you even sat down to ponder that so far?
If there's no season?
Yeah.
I haven't really thought about it. I just kind of take it day by day and let them tell me what's going to happen. But I mean, if there's no season, you know, I'm going to keep doing the same things. I'm just going to make sure I stay ready and stay active. And, you know, if there's no season, you just get ready for next season. Then that's all you can do. And hopefully I sign with another team. I get to, you know, be on another team either here in the States. And I still have an opportunity to play baseball somewhere. That's all I can ask for. And just have the opportunity to keep playing baseball.
Yeah, the game we love talking about here. We really like talking to you, and I was really looking forward to seeing you at the ballpark, but I'm so glad you answered the call and gave us a chance to talk to you on the phone today. Thank you so much. Stay safe, and we'll see you soon, hopefully.
Yeah, sounds good. Appreciate it, John. Anytime. Like I said, I'm always here whenever you guys need me. I'm just, look, we're all doing the same thing right now, sitting at home and like you said, I love talking baseball. It's the game we love to play. It's the game we love to talk about. So, like I said, anytime anybody needs anything, needs to talk to me, wants to talk to me, whatever. Same thing with, you know, the fans or whatever. Whenever they want to, like, send a message every now and then to talk about baseball or something like that, that's more than cool to do. You know, I'm always on Twitter looking at stuff and always available.
Okay, man. Thank you so much.
No problem. Thank you.
Take care.
All right. Thanks a lot, Jay. Jay said I asked him what his specialty dish is, and he said his baked chicken is really on point lately. Now, I don't know if I would say my, you know, any dish that I make is always, you know, it's always jamming, but that sounds healthy, the baked chicken. And the first time I heard about baked chicken, I just imagine, you know, you throw some seasonings on it and throw it in the oven, but I'm sure he's doing more than that. But anyway, what left a taste in your mouth after you heard this one, good or bad?
Well, I want to know more about the chicken, to be honest, but I don't have
it's too late at night to eat, so don't worry about it.
Yeah, and I don't have an oven, so we'll skip that for now. So, but okay. Jay, I'm waiting for you, man. Okay, now, a couple of things. First, I've got a comment. The Scrappy Marines.
Oh, you took my thing.
Scrappy. I love it. They're Scrappy.
Jay's Jay and I had a thing about that when he talked about the carp being Scrappy his first year. And I thought, well, wait a second now. Because the carp are, I mean, in this league, they're one of the better hitting teams. So I wouldn't really go Scrappy. And we scrapped about the word Scrappy for a while. So came right up again here today.
Well, I'm gonna add to the scrapbook. Yeah. Or scrap pile, whichever way you want to go.
You're taking a page out of that book.
I am indeed, and I'm chewing on it. So no homework for y'all. So the point being that I understand certainly when he calls the carp Scrappy, although they were a powerhouse a relative powerhouse in the Central League in his time there.
Right.
They were right. also a team that played that style of baseball. I mean, they had the big hitters, but they also, they generally, the Carp have developed and marketed a style of, you know, fast base running, good defense, sort of a, the ability to play small ball, the ability to mm-hmm. play scrappy baseball, even if they, you know, they had big hitters and drew a lot of, they did a lot of little things right, but they, and, you know, so they were, and I like the definition of them as scrappy, but maybe with a scrappy little asterisk next to it. But the Marines definitely are scrappy. But of course, the Marines that Jay remembers are the pre Brandon Laird Marines, and the pre right. bring in the fences so we can hit home runs too, like the other guys Marines.
Right, that's true.
Things have changed a little bit. But yeah, they're still, and I loved your comments about the fans. I mean, everybody I say sort of condescendingly, everybody loves the Marines fans, because I'm sure some people can't stand them.
Who are those people?
Yeah, there's always
wait a minute.
There's always somebody who like. You know, I've always been fond of different teams' cheering sections, with the exception of the Giants, who I find very derivative and I don't know, they just copy whatever anybody else does, and unoriginal. So, but generally, once you get to know fans, you tend to like them, and. So I enjoyed that. And I remember my first experiences with the Marines fans were just so outstanding. And I remember a sports editor for the Omiri Shimbun hadn't been to a game in a blue moon. And we were at Cebu Dome watching the Lions open against the Marines. And I'm going to say it was 2001, because Alex Cabrera was his debut game.
And okay.
The Marines came from behind to win that. And it was a Johnny Kuroki was pitching against Daisuke Matsuzaka. And it was just an electric game. But when the editor from the sports editor from the Omiri Shimbun watched the Marines fans, his jaw was like dropping at the end of the game. Because this wave of black hopping up and down and just going bananas. And it's like something you didn't see then. You see a little bit more of it now. I mean, the crowds have gotten better and better and better, and the whole environment has gotten better, I think, all across Japan. But at that
time, you know, Jim, it's a copycat fan league. So,
well, I think it's more of getting a good thing and going with it.
Okay.
And they're in their own ways. And also in 2001, the Hawks were just sort of developing into that sort of big fandom. I mean, the Marines fandom isn't big. It's just
rabid, yeah. And
creative.
That's too creative. I'll give you
anyway,
that.
Anyway, yeah. to move on, I was interested, you know, I didn't know, you know, when he said the Milwaukee Brewers bullpen was one of the best in MLB. I didn't really go into a lot of research, but they did have 50 saves last year. And I guess I haven't looked at MLB save totals in a long time. I remember when they had relievers who had 50 saves, you know?
Yeah, I remember those days.
Yeah, it's like I'm going,
like
okay.
In the 80s when they were also most of the guys on the team had 20 home runs.
Like, you don't have 50? Like, what's wrong with you? Okay. So they were
lazy
second.
Bomb.
They tied for second with three teams for 50. So, and that's the only measure I really looked at. So it's not really good, but I have noticed in the past that Jay fit in very well in the U.S. last year. He fit really well into that swing and miss, elevated pitches, elevated launch angle generation. He got his strikeout levels went through the roof. And so I'm really curious to see what he comes back with. And so that was it. And then I guess I enjoyed the question and answer about Roki Sasaki. So that was quite
right.
Good. And then the final thing, I just go on and before I'll let you go and have everything is the last bit about being in Japan. You know, I had to think he was, not only was he you know, oh, I'm lucky to be in Japan, or, you know, I'm lucky to be where I am. But in Japan, the players aren't taking pay cuts.
Yeah, I haven't seen that yet.
No, nope, they're not taking
pay cuts. We haven't seen it yet, but I think it's coming. No, it might be coming.
It might be when they say no more team. I mean, they have said no team activities, but they haven't said we're not paying you. It may have to do with Japanese law. I don't know. But basically, you know, people are getting taken care of. People have a place to work out.
Right.
And people are getting paid. So, you know, the way you put that, not only, you know, I guess it was my thought about the irony of coming to Japan and not being able to play, but almost the good fortune of coming to Japan in this year. I mean, if you're not going to play, I'd much rather be in, if I'm a baseball player, I'd much rather be in Japan than in America where I'm not playing and I'm not doing anything.
That's true. That's true.
Except getting service time for not playing, I guess.
I guess, yeah. Especially if you're a manager who's gotten suspended, but we won't get into that. I actually really like the stuff about Roki Sasaki, and I know everyone on the couch has a method to get the best out of a skinny teen who just became a pro, but and so do I. I mean, I'm on the couch. I've never done it, so I wanted to get his perspective, and I really like what he said. Although I guess it's a very precarious place to be. You can't extend a guy, but you got to get the guy reps. But you can't extend him, but you got to get him reps. And obviously in this environment with no games being played and just guys being going out to practice, and again, it doesn't sound like they're doing as much practice as some of the other teams, but who really knows? And maybe the foreign guys, they're giving them a different routine. Plus Jay, and he said he has been close with Frank Herman, who came over from Rakuten in the off season. So those guys are going out to play catch, and maybe they're just on a different program from some of the Japanese. Who really, really knows? But it, you know, it's a really tough place to get a young pitcher like this, and then not have him be able to work, but try to keep him in the shape that you want him. I don't envy some of these coaches, although I think Masato Yoshi is probably one of the better pitching coaches who has worked with, again, Jay said he worked with Shohei Ohtani when Ohtani was with the Fighters, when they both were over there. So he has done it before. But for me, all these guys are different. So, and Ohtani was a completely different entity because this was a two-way player, and you had to figure out when he was going to get his batting stuff in, and you had to worry about that as opposed to Sasaki was only pitching. So it's a really different animal that he's working with, so to speak. So, you know, I've heard so many front office and development types offer their philosophies about players and the differences, you know, in being on the farm and how a guy pitches on the farm as opposed to when they get out there with the first team. You know, things are different. The atmosphere is different. The environment's different. Obviously, the hitters are different. The stakes are bigger. It's just different. So when Jay said something simplistic yet profound, like, you know, he needs reps, but he needs to be ushered in slowly, that's why some of these guys get the big bucks. You really understand it, because he also, Sasaki also has to, as Jay said, he's got to gain the confidence that he can get these guys out on any level and how to go about doing that. So I thought that was all interesting. I don't think he gave us a deep, you know, and of course Jay's still playing, so why should he? He's not a coach.
Yep.
But
ask players to be scouts and general managers and coaches and
yep.
therapists.
And managers, yep.
Yeah.
Field managers, general managers, yeah. Therapists.
Hey, can you take away my claws? They're kind of tight. Okay, well, no. All right.
Yeah. But I think he has a good idea of how to go about it. But of course, he hasn't done it either. So, yeah, it was an interesting answer. Like I said, I don't think he got deep into all the things that he would probably do. But I don't think he's actually given much thought to it because he's, like I'm saying, he's not, that's not his job. His job is to, you know, go out there and get guys out as well. But, you know, when he said the guy that Sasaki is really nice and he came up to him and started talking, I thought, oh, well, that means he wants to go to the major leagues. Sasaki wants to go. That's the first thing I thought when I heard Jay say that. I'm like, okay, well, we know where he's headed, but you know, he has to get ready, and you get ready by getting guys out here. So I thought that was interesting. And
that would be the second time you telling me that was a trigger. But by that regards, I guess Yuki Matsui also wants to go to the majors, because one day I was walking past stretching Eagles players and he said, hi. So.
And that's when, you know, that's what you take away from that, huh?
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. I wasn't. But I had to write about Seiya Suzuki a few weeks ago, and one scout said, when you see Japanese players put on a lot of muscle, that means they want to play in the States. Okay. I'm okay. Maybe.
Okay. The Carps
look. You got me. I hadn't quite thought about it that way. I mean, I suppose that makes sense. I would ask, you know, thinking back about the one point, you know, you can lead a guy who's played in the Central League and the Pacific League to talk about the difference in the leagues. You can lead them right up to the point where they can take a dive and say, one league is this and one league is that, but you can't make them do it.
You can't make them win. I mean, again, it's a really tough situation. You gotta talk a good game and play a good game to win in that league. So
yeah, true enough.
I wouldn't expect him to answer the question any other way, that he's a competitor. But I was maybe thinking that he would say, well, you know, it's a difficult league. It's a difficult challenge, but we wouldn't be, you know, we're not going to give, he did give us that part, which is they're not going to back down just because they're the SoftBank Hawks. But, and actually I don't remember what the number was, but I think the Marines had a winning record against the Hawks last year. So they did play them really well. So I wouldn't expect any other thing. And then they beat them last year. So what makes them think that they wouldn't be able to beat them this year? But you got to win against the other teams as well. But I did see an article today in which it was about the Marines, and it was Tadahito Iguchi, the manager. And he said, basically, the quote was, I want, because the players have been off for a long time now, it's getting to where it's really drawn out. And obviously, we don't know when the start will be. We'll talk about the schedule, possible schedule, a little bit later in the show. But Iguchi said, I want them to use this time wisely, rethink their process up to this point, and take a good look at themselves. And certainly, that they have a lot of time to reflect and figure out things. But you can't work on that many things when you can't, as we talked about with Coco Ballantyne last week, you can't work with your teammates when you're not working with your teammates and getting the bullpens in and doing the things that you normally do. So that's really hard, coach. Put me in, coach, but give me some help here. Give me some time to get ready. Cause I think everybody's going to have to start from, it might even be, you know, they're trying to stay in shape, but I venture to think they're going to be way behind by the time they get the go sign and have to get back into shape again. We're going to need another month for a training camp.
It's not going to be. It's funny because I know the team, they know this, and they know this, but it's just, it ain't going to be easy. I mean, this whole season nothing about this season is going to be easy. So. That's your one.
Okay.
That's my one bit of soapbox wisdom for tonight.
All right. Well, Jay said he can really throw down in the kitchen. So maybe one day when this whole coronavirus thing is done and Jay's still around and we've got time, we'll figure out. He lives over in Chiba. He's kind of close to the station, to the ballpark, he said. So maybe we can get over there and have one of those southern cook-offs or something like that.
Cook-off, indeed.
You might want to come over for dinner. Yeah, you might want to come over to eat, because this would be fun. From what
I can
dishes at each other.
We're all kitchen guys, so yeah.
Yeah, get your wife to. Yeah, you can throw down too, and get your wife to bring some of that bread.
yeah.
Like that. Yeah. Well, that'll be bread to be named later, probably.
Hashtag high heat.
Okay, player.
Moving right along, making a four-seam transition, let's talk about the Asian schedule. So we had Taiwan baseball start off, and KBO started off as well. This past, well, I don't know which one. I know Taiwan started first. I think it was the week before or maybe the weekend. I don't know the exact dates. And so my cousin, I reference a lot, my cousin who lives in New York, who's a big sports fan, said to me the other day, so he said, so Taiwan, how close is that to you guys? And I'm like, it's another country, bro.
It was very close to Yakujima, where the Oryx Buffaloes used to train. It was like, that's like closer to Taipei than it is to Naha, but otherwise.
There you go. There you go. So, so Taiwan started, and then the KBO, the Korean Baseball Organization, also started and got their seasons underway. I think Taiwan was a couple weeks ago.
Well, KBO is May 5th.
Oh, that's right. They started playing practice preseason games.
Yep.
Okay, so yeah, they started preseason.
Their season's going to start May 5th. And
I thought it was I got May 6th, but okay. Yeah, okay. Yeah,
the EPBL was going to start on the 11th, and they got rained out. I mean, they only have two games, so they got rained out and started on the 12th.
All right. So and so he asked me, you know, how close are they, and when is Japan going to start? And I said, well, I said we're a different country, and not anytime soon, I don't think. And you know, firstly, the outbreak hit in South Korea, I think a little bit sooner than it hit in Japan, and they went to work right away. It seemed to me, I would see news reports in which there were crews disinfecting heavy use parts of the city, and I haven't seen that in Japan.
They had a big cluster in Daegu, and mm-hmm. it was but they were on it. You know, even though the person who caused it, or the trigger for that cluster infection caused it, you know, it was they knew who it was, and they were on it. I mean, and Japan has been very lax about testing.
Lax.
We'll just say that Japan.
No, lax. I like the word.
Yeah. I mean, they've been very. I don't want to say Japan has been negligent, but they have not been.
No, I wouldn't.
They haven't been shouting loudly. I mean, they did. Japan did stop. They did close the schools at the end of March, and they did shut down large events at the end of February.
Yeah, a lot of the moves to me were not a real sense of urgency, but let's do this just in case.
Yeah.
And that sense, that lack of urgency, I think transferred or came through in the general public, because I think you and I were talking about the fact that I would get on a train and go to work. And this is maybe a couple weeks ago, and people were still sitting shoulder to shoulder. Now, everyone wears a mask, and they were wearing masks way before this even became a problem. So that's nothing new. And I think you and I spoke about it on the show. I think even when the spring training games were going on, but I just didn't get a sense of urgency. And I don't know. It seemed like to me that the big 800 pound elephant in the room was the Olympics, and that the committees tried to dismember the 800 pound elephant and just hide the pieces in the four corners of the room and say, "I'm going to see here."
Yeah, that was amazing. I know it was.
Yeah, we're going to have the Olympics, and
they were in full. I wrote on Twitter once that there was the International Olympic Committee had opened its special operations annex in denial, and that whenever they were talking about the Tokyo Olympics happening this year, they were holding those meetings in denial.
Yes, they were. Yeah. So, but once they canceled the Olympics, you know, then we saw that the numbers of confirmed cases of coronavirus spiked, and I thought, you know, that was pretty convenient. There was more testing, it seemed, after that announcement. So anyway, I think the rest of the world kind of question the possibility the games would go on, but I think a lot of people in Tokyo were trying to make that happen and swore the coronavirus wouldn't slow the process.
Well, I'll tell you something I did learn about that process from people, that the news about the Olympics was, I have to say, it was manipulated. Because, you know, I asked about it. There was a big story. The Olympics officially were postponed on March 24th. And on March 23rd in the States, or March Sunday in the States, Dick Pound, the senior International Olympic Committee member, was saying, no, we've already decided. It's already been decided, because the situation is, you know, by that time, the U.S. Olympic Committee was backing out. The U.S. Olympic and Paralympic Committee was saying this is going to be a problem. And, you know, the U.S. OPC doesn't move unless NBC tells them which way to go.
Right. The Olympics. Since they own the... Yeah, they basically own them.
So, I mean, I'm exaggerating for effect, but the fact is that, you know, the NBC basically decides who's going to get paid and when. Because they're paying a huge amount of the bills. So when NBC said, when the U.S. Athletics Federation and the Swimming Federation, the two biggest ones in the U.S. Umbrella, said, we don't want any part of this, NBC, you know, had cold feet. The U.S. OPC had cold feet. And Dick Pound said, look, it ain't going to happen. And then it's already been decided. And then 2 days later, Prime Minister Shinzo Abe of Japan says, I don't think we could do it. So we're going to be the best. We're going to be the adults in the room, and we're going to postpone the Olympics for the good of the world. The same guy who a week earlier had said, you know, there's no chance it won't happen in July. So my whole point being that, and the reason I say it was, I suspect it was manipulated, is the story about Dick Pound's story. He spoke to USA Today, was played so softly in Japan that you could have heard a pin drop.
This was huge. Nothing to see here, especially when you can't see it.
I read stories in the Japanese media that said he had rescinded his comments, but you know what? They don't appear anywhere in English. My guess is that the Prime Minister's office got the major media organizations together and said, look, this didn't happen. You didn't see anything. You don't know anything. Because there was a word going out, he rescinded it. And that's what I heard. That was the official word. He rescinded what he said. He saw,
Walked the comment back. Okay.
Indeed, apparently, but only in Japan. Only in the Japanese
media. Only in Japan, and only in Japanese media. Well,
there was. I don't want to say it was a cover up, but it smells like a cover up.
I don't want to say it was a cover up, so I just won't say it.
I can't say it was, but it has the markings of a cover up.
Right. Well, and the Constitution here basically prevents a total lockdown. So, you know, I've just really seen a lot of self-centered excuses for people going out to the park and just out and about. And large numbers of businesses are closed and everything. There's really not a lot of places you can go and do stuff.
But it took a while. It took a while, because when they started the self-restraint, it was during the peak cherry blossom viewing season, and people were having self-restraint by going out and standing next to each other and viewing the cherry blossoms and eating and drinking and singing. So basically with every passing week, the government has gotten, since the Olympics were postponed, we're not allowed to say the C word yet. Since the Olympics were postponed, basically the government has come on TV and said, look, guys, you really are not getting the message. No means no. And it's like every day it's fewer and fewer and fewer people.
Yeah, well, like I said, there are a lot of people working, telecommuting, a lot more. I know you're doing it. I did a lot more shifts over the past 10 days, and I'm going to be doing it tomorrow on Sunday. So that'll be good. And I'll try to do as many as I can. But, you know, I don't know if we're considered essential workers or not. I think a lot of the work we're doing is getting the news out is essential, but I'm not sure that it's essential that we be there at the office to do it. So, but
I think
the management has to navigate those waters.
Yeah. I think essential work constitutes people is their boss tells them it's essential for you to be here to get paid.
Exactly. Especially the foreign workers. I was actually going to work on a story with one of our news writers talking about the fact that a lot of foreign workers are out here in Japan. But I don't think this is unique to this country per se, but a lot of foreign workers who are being asked to come into work.
Sure.
And there's no guarantee that if they get sick, that they'll continue to have a job if they're not working and they have an extended period away from the office and get healthy and recover and able to come back. If that is indeed the case, will they have a job? So it's tough all over. It's not just the United States. It's not just Japan. It's all over.
It's hard. If you're somebody who works for a living, it's going to be hard. If you've got money and you've got a company, if you contribute to political candidates, you're going to get taken care of.
All right. Let's make a two-seam transition. And since we're still talking essentially about the COVID-19 situation, let's give some good news and some updates about two of the guys we've talked about in recent episodes who have been hospitalized. One is Atsushi Kataoka, the former Fighters and Tigers star who was released from care.
Yeah.
This past week after twice testing negative. So he went into the hospital. I think it was YouTube. I can't remember. But using social media, he put up a video and spoke about the fact that he was in the hospital and pleaded and urged people to be careful and to be safe. And he has recovered and gotten out of the hospital. So clap, clap, clap for him. And former longtime Pacific League skipper Masataka Nashida, whom we reported was out of ICU, I think we said last week, and he was back in the general population in the hospital, is reportedly recovering nicely. He's eating, he's speaking, and he is ambulatory, so he's getting stronger, so that's great.
Yeah, I'm glad to hear that, because if he's not talking, he's not well.
Yeah, so good news on that front, and I haven't heard about any other people. We know that the three players for the Tigers, including Shintaro Fujinami, have also recovered. So
back to their voluntary, unstructured practice.
Not unmonitored, unstructured practices. They might be monitoring him, though. As Trevor, the Hanshin Tiger blogger, said on the show, the F word, I think they have to monitor him. Make sure there's no F bombs going on. All right. And one note about the schedule. So the latest in the ever-moving schedule timeline, it's a possible June 19th date at the earliest.
Right. So in the past, we've seen the Interleague disappear, and they're trying.
Right. Yeah, the Interleague disappeared.
And they've gone from 143, and the new magic number in their little math puzzle is 125.
They have a magic number. Wow, already.
Yeah, I know, amazing. It's probably created with all the thought that goes into their other magic numbers and the calculations, but right now their magic goal is 125. Preserve that schedule. So we'll see. And in fact, Christian Jin, I think, tweeted today that chances of 125 games in Japan equals zero. That's probably true. I mean, as much as I think Japan has escaped a much higher burden of the COVID-19 at this time, and the numbers seem to have stagnated or dropped a little bit, They're showing the number of people who are showing symptoms and being tested and tested positive who aren't professional athletes seems to be dropping a bit. And so it's possible that there will be a season here. I mean, it just seems possible, but 125. Yeah, probably not.
Yeah. So they talked about perhaps the end of June, beginning of July, but
we'll have to nothing, wait and see.
Yeah, nothing concrete, of course, and there can't be. And we've heard this phrase of the flattening of the curve, and we want to see the peak go down. But again, I thought you brought up something very profound early on in this whole situation. What is the number? Where does the scale go that the government and the doctors and the scientists all say, okay, well, let's get back to at least playing games. Right.
Yeah. Is it zero? Is it one a week? Is it, you know, but it requires testing and it, you know, I might say it'll be the day when you don't hear somebody talking about miracle cures.
Hashtag high heat.
And that happened the day when, and Japan's prime minister is pushing a miracle cure as well, so which is shouldn't come as a shock to anybody. when you stop hearing about the miracle cures and you start talking about real solutions, then maybe we'll be talking about baseball, hopefully soon.
Okay, all right, let's go to fielding questions. All right, this one comes from Kai. He's in Nara Prefecture, and it was via email. He says, this is Kai Kawaguchi. I'm Japanese, but I studied at Ohio Northern University until March as an exchange student. Now, he said he had to return because of the coronavirus situation, and he said baseball is his favorite topic. So he continues, anyway, as I was surprised that you guys know so much about MPV, you guys must be more familiar with it than I am. And I would guarantee that we are, since we're probably twice your age, at least. he says, his question is,
We're not going there.
I said at least. Okay. I left you out of it almost.
I appreciate that.
He says, his question is, what do you think about the Hanshin Tigers this year if they have a season? The manager, Akihiro Oyano, always said that we will definitely be a champion, saying that that is very important. Every year, a lot of commentators say they will win, but the Tigers never do. Kai. All right, Jim.
Okay, well, the Tigers always have a lot of talent. I mean, the Tigers' problem tends to be balance, and my bugbear with the Tigers is commitment. I'm not saying the Tigers have people who should be committed, but I'm saying that they have players who should be committed to, and it's kind of it has been an organizational weakness. Although I love Yano, I loved him as a player. If you read my blog post about catchers in Japan, you'll see Yano rates very highly in a couple of categories. But I think he's just a fun manager, and I hope that, you know, he'll be the guy that I thought Tomoaki Kanemoto would be to tell the team and the papers to go take their hopes and ambitions and lack of patience and stuff it in a waste can somewhere.
Wowza. All right. Well, I lived, you know, in Nagoya for 12 years. Kai, I've been to Nara to see the changing leaves in autumn, so it's a beautiful area. And
I said oh dear.
There are a lot of deer out there, a lot of, you know, wildlife. It's nice. But I got to Japan in 1990, and since I've been here, the Tigers have won in 2003, and I actually was back home in the States when they won that year.
You were at Koshien the last time they played in the – no, you were at Koshien.
No, I was.
Lost the Japan series there.
Yes, and then the next time they won was 2005. Uh-huh. And so basically, look at the 15-year stretch to now. I've seen them win one championship. And there are a lot of Tigers fans. Now, they finished second a load of times, 2006. 2008, 10, 13, 14, 2017.
They got to Fuku, you know, they got to the Japan series.
Yeah. But since I live so close to the Kansai area, I had friends who were a lot of friends who are Tigers fans. And this is what they always said. No matter how well they played in the beginning of the season, or no matter how good things were going or how well things were going, it always came down to after the Koshien High School tournament, how this team would do. And a lot of times during that, what you've deemed or somebody's deemed, I guess you used that phrase.
My famous last column that never happened.
The road trip of death. Indeed. Basically, because they have to play away from Koshien Stadium, that has seemed to doom them in some instances, but not always. But for some reason, the team just fades. And my Hunching Tigers friends have always said this team just fades in the second half. And even the year it didn't fade in the second half and made it to the Japan Series, that was the quickest four-game sweep I ever saw. when they lost to the Lotte Marines, who were just, you know.
Oh, right. Yeah, that was pretty much a blowout. There was one close game in the entire series.
Yeah, so what did I think about them this year? I think that they had a chance, because what Jim was talking about, the balance. I was thinking them trying to balance themselves on a high wire when you said that. But, no, I was, you know, having some
offensive and having defensive balance.
I know, but that's what that was my image in my head.
Okay. Gotcha.
Because they were able to play quality defense last year and pitch well, but they just couldn't score runs. Mm. This year, we expected the run production to be a little bit better. I might have questioned the pitching, but we haven't gotten a chance to see. So I think, you know, obviously Justin Bohr, we interviewed him earlier in the at the beginning. At least I talked to him at the very beginning of camp, a weekend. That interview is. What, back in early February for us? So you could go back and listen to that show if you are a new listener, Kai. But I thought his pickup was good. I really liked the Jerry Sands pickup, and they went out and got some pitching. They got a lot of redundancy and a lot of backup at a lot of positions, and I thought they were going to have a really good chance, and I had them finishing in the playoffs. So I thought they were going to do really well. But a shorter season means you have to, if they get out there and start playing these games, a shorter season means you can't blow games late. They really hurt a lot more. You have to get the run production. You have to pitch well. And there's a lot more pressure on to produce every night. So, and
like,
to be consistent.
I like a shorter season because it means really lame teams like my Yakult Swallows have a much better chance of winning just through sheer luck.
It does. It does. It really does. Indeed. So
short season's good for the lamos.
It can be good for the lamos. But yeah, you just don't have time for slow starts and anything like that. But yeah, I imagine we both would have been watching MPB a lot longer than Kai has been on this planet.
Yeah, I would suspect so, yeah. I mean, the first time I came across a player who was born after I arrived in Japan, I was kind of in shock. First time I'd talked to one.
First time I'd seen one.
Yeah.
It's like Bigfoot, right? You'd only heard of him before that, right?
Well, no, it was funny because I was going to talk to him, and he was a Swallows pitcher. And in fact, he was born and he grew up like a block away from where I lived in Toyama City. So it was I remember the whole getup, but it was a shock. But now it's like almost all the managers are younger than me.
Yeah, I would imagine that that we are older than Kai's parents.
That happens. We got to be older than somebody, man.
You got to be, hey, it's a beastly alternative, right?
Indeed, it does.
So, thank you very much, Kai, for listening, first of all, and to take the time to
old guys,
sticking with the old guys, and sending in a note to us like that with a question. Mm-hmm. And good question. And like I said, I thought the Tigers had a really good shot. to at least play in the playoffs and do well in the playoffs as well. But we'll see. I'm not giving up.
I don't think I have a feeling there won't be any playoffs this year.
Yeah, you might have to win to get in. So, and that would be a challenge. But I think I can't even remember where I predicted. I had the Giants. It was the Giants or the Tigers.
No, it's good to have to pick them first when somebody asks what you think.
Yeah, yeah. So, thank you very much for the letter, for the note. Anyone else who has a note, a comment, a criticism, or some more encouragement? And we did get another email with some encouragement. Like I said before, I wasn't really looking for a number when I asked you guys to let us know if you wanted us to continue doing shows through this time. But trickling in are some really nice letters and notes about us continuing to do the podcast. So those are always appreciated, and those things encourage us. And I can tell you right now, we have a great show for you next week with Carter Stewart Jr. of the SoftBank Hawks coming up. So that should be really fun. Nice long interview with him. So in this time of no sports, we really thank you for listening and invite you to chime in. Do so on Twitter at JBW Podcast. Send an email to YAKYUJOHN@gmail.com or hit us up on the Facebook page. And MP3s, always, always encouraged. Let's hear your voice. Thank you very much for listening. We'll talk to you next week. Enjoy your time off.
And see you safe at home.